The Anton Savage Show Saturday
with Nifty Business on News Talk.
Barbara Scully, broadcaster and writer, is with me, as is Kieran Cunningham, Irish Daily Star journalist. We should start where Shane Beattie left us, Kieran. This is with Leo Varadkar delivering on his promise to raise the issue of the ceasefire with Joe Biden. Joe Biden evidently well prepared and expecting it and went, yeah, sure, great stuff. And we all moved on.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it ticks a box for Leo Varadkar that people said he shouldn't have been there. And he said, well, I did raise it. And he said, I agree. So something has been achieved. But really, what has been achieved and what is achieved by this annual visit? You do have people who make very strong arguments that it's soft power, that nobody else has this kind of access once a year. But I wonder really, what are the practical benefits? Like, nobody ever comes out with data to explain how we actually benefit. And it reminds me of these things, like you sometimes see stats like 10 billion people watch the Super Bowl. And you go, no, hold on. And then they break it down. Okay, it's about half a million or something. Like, there's exaggerations made all the time for stuff like this. It's this tour allure, you know, Darby O'Gill view, Darby O'Gill and the little people. Like, Joe Biden has that, you know, the quote. Have you got that quote there? Give me that quote about a hinge again.
Let the hinge of our friendship not go rusty.
Yeah, that's what he came out yesterday. And that's, to me, is a speechwriter thinking down.
I should clarify this. He described this to an Irish contingent as being an old traditional Irish phrase to apparently bafflement in the room. But that was the old traditional Irish
phrase. I've never heard it. And to me, it sounds like some stressed and frazzled poor speechwriter was told, oh, we have the Irish in today, give us a quote. And he Googled and this came up, and Joe Biden threw it out and said it was his grandfather that came out with it. But
now, Barbara, can I ask you on this? I would have thought that, yeah, it's all very Darby O'Gill and the little people, but the little people work in Intel and Lilly and Pfizer and Boston Scientific and Apple and Microsoft and Google and LinkedIn and Twitter, and all the better that we keep a nice little relationship going with the lads who send us all these multinationals.
I have a feeling, though, that the reason they send us all these multinationals has more to do with our tax rate than Darby O'Gill and the little people and the 100 years of friendship and the diddly eye and the paddy wackery and all the rest of it. I mean, yeah, I found the whole thing kind of nauseating. Mary Robinson made a call yesterday very eloquently, as she does on behalf of the elders, in a direct message to Leo Varadkar to raise. She said that he was not to spend too long talking about the humanitarian situation, because we all know about that. But she said he should have delivered in a very direct way a political message.
Why?
That the US should not continue to provide arms and bombs and money. She said because the US is complicit in reducing a people to famine while we are all watching, and we are complicit then as well. Which I thought, you know, kind of went to the heart of this. I thought the whole...
No, is there not a logical paradox in that? If the fact of us raising the ceasefire makes a blind bit of difference politically, it argues that 3 days of mutual events makes a huge difference politically. Either it is of value to us to do this kind of stuff in a positive way, and we can also use a bit of power to raise the ceasefire, or the whole thing is pointless.
But I think the point is that Leo Varadkar, unless he did it in the meeting, he didn't do it in front of the media. He didn't raise the actual thing about the about American support of Israel. He mentioned about the humanitarian, and we need a ceasefire in order to get aid in and food in. You know, the whole idea that we are that the Americans or anybody else, there would be a ceasefire while at the same time continuing to arm a war which is reducing people to famine, and which is, in my mind, absolutely, definitely genocide, is like nauseating. And I found the whole thing then just, I mean, it's always nauseating, but it's like the fact that of the backdrop against which all of this nonsense is going on makes it very difficult to be funny about it. I just think that the whole thing, the only funny bit was Kamala Harris, as was in Shane's report, Kamala Harris describing Matt and Leo as their couple's friend.
Well, look at Pascal, like, and Janet Yellen. You never know what way relationships develop. Kieran, there is a reference in one of the papers to, there's a quote from somebody describing the Irish calls for ceasefire as being the equivalent in US politics of a gnat on a windshield.
Yeah, but sometimes the gnat has to flap its wings and make itself heard. And I can understand that when you look at Ireland as a little dot on the edge, a little dot of an island on the edge of Europe. But it has I think it's 12% or between 12 and 16 in the last surveys in the US claim Irish ancestry. So it does have power beyond what you think it should have. But at the same time, like in that report, you know, you hear claims about Joe Biden is playing, you know, it's election year and he's playing, looking for the Irish American vote as well. But we've seen this with Donald Trump, the amount of Irish Americans around Donald Trump and around the Tea Party and around, you know, the Republican Party as a whole. There's no way you can say now Irish Americans or, you know, the Kennedy crew, that it was always Democratic politics. It's far from it now. It's far more mixed, and you're as likely, Irish Americans are possibly even more likely to be Republicans now because they're more established and have more money than they were in the past.
They're also tied to an Ireland that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Irish American, as personified by Joe Biden, they are tied to an Ireland of 50 years ago. They are not tied to an Ireland of now. And I understand we're only a little small country, but we do have a huge diaspora. And we also have a kind of a moral place, I think, where our voice does carry a little bit more weight than it should because of our history.
But hang on a minute. I thought we were arguing at the start of this that this was pointless diddly-eye and serve no purpose. How can it be that and also evidence of our power?
No, but I do think the whole lot of it is pointless diddly-eye. But I do think that we have a platform, or we have a kind of a role to play because of the fact that we understand a situation like what's going on in the Middle East as a country that was oppressed for 800 years, as a country that was colonized, as a country where we were branded as terrorists because of the actions of the IRA. It gives us a unique insight into a lot of this kind of stuff. So I don't think we should keep talking, but I do think all the hoopla is ridiculous. And I do think that Leo Varadkar's visit ultimately
But I'm still stuck on the paradox. One provides the ground, provides foundation for the other. If you are saying that we have the capacity by virtue of a position on the world stage to influence these things that matter, well, what gives us that position on the world stage is access to the Naval Academy and the Vice President, is access to a conversation in the White House with the US President, is in the entirety of Washington politics
but
going green for the weekend.
We could send Leo and Matt over to do that job. But as far as I know, unless it's changed this year, all the cabinet are all over America. Do you know, we don't need to do that. That's ridiculous. I think, you know, head of state go, say his bit, but I think he could have been way more definitive in what he said than what he was.
Are either of you going to go to the parade?
No, not a chance.
God, this is very low energy.
This is a lot of bad humbug.
Yeah, this is a lot of bad humbug.
No, like I have...
Will you watch it?
No, God no.
Why do you say God no? It's not a threat.
It's nothing for me. The last parade,
Mockness and the lads are
the last city parade I went at was New York in 98, and I'd always been intrigued by going to New York for Paddy's Day because it's built up so much, and I hated it because it's so militaristic in New York. Like it's basically police and army again and again, and you go, well, I know that's very much the American way, but we're not used to that. Like I've enjoyed, I go to...
We did populate a lot of the US police forces though.
Oh no, absolutely. I know it should be part of it, but it really dominates it. When you're there, it's very striking that it's so militaristic. But like I do, like I'm from Glencoe and Killin Donegal, and I have gone to the parades there regularly, but I like those because they're the kind of Craggy Island type parade with somebody's throwing a flag over a tractor, and there's, you know, it's low key and it's a bit of crack.
Well, that begs the question, what is going to be the motif? Because I remember last year, the Enoch Burke and the Burke family motif showed up in a lot of those parade floats in the small villages around Ireland, some of them very good. What's going to be the one for this year? What is the thing of this year that's going to show up being dragged by a Massey Ferguson through small towns in Ireland?
I hope you're not asking me. I'm not even looking at
a giant navel and people staring into it, because that sums up Ireland. Like I actually dug this out earlier. I was curious about this because Shakespeare wrote 37 plays. There are 1,223 characters in those plays. How many of those characters are Irish?
In Shakespeare's works?
Yeah, out of 1,221. One. Captain McMorris in Henry V. And he has only a couple of lines, but there's one word I can't use this early in the morning, but he says, "What is my nation is a villain and a knave and a rascal. What is my nation? Who talks of my nation?" 500 years ago, it was navel gazing. This Irish soldier of the British Army was debating the notion of Irishness. So we never got away with that. So a giant navel with Patrick Keelty staring into it as he's the Grand Marshal.
What? I wonder that does the
I've never such a level of negativity.
Going, yeah.
And a text then arrives in that says we're such a bunch of self-loathing nihilists. I'm like, I'm calling this quits.
No, but I don't think the St. Patrick's Day parade. I have fond memories being ancient of like the St. Patrick's Day parade in the 1970s, where you had companies like, does anybody remember? I'm sure some of the listeners will, if they're as old as me, Able Alarms. And they used to do these amazing floats with, like, yeah, they were with cartoony characters and the whole works. It was brilliant. But I have a feeling, and I haven't gone to a St. Patrick's Day parade in a million years, but St. Patrick, the whole festival now, I think, is far more for tourists than it is for Irish people.
You see, again, I'm finding silver linings to attach to all of your clouds. I see nothing wrong with saying, Inyas, come lads and bring your wallets. A text to say, I work in retail and believe me, my job and many more depends on US tourism. So give me a break.
Yeah, no, that's all great. But would you go in with your kids and take them into the Mallee in Dublin City Centre for the parade?
Yeah.
Would you?
But I don't see what the issue is. Like, it's a parade.
No, but
it's
for, but that's what, it's funny. It's, you say it's for tourists. I really enjoyed St. Patrick's Day when I was living in London. It was great crack when you're living abroad. And you, it wasn't a bank holiday then. You take the day off and you go to the pub and it'd be a great laugh. And it did seem to mean more there, but here it is very much tourist.
It's tourist,
and also it can be a bit messy with, to be honest, with drinking and street drinking and stuff.
And I'll try this one more time with feeling, and then we'll move on to something else.
So you can't force us to like it.
No. I just want to get clarity on what it is that you object to. The whole idea of the Irish nation saying it's nice to every now and then celebrate the fact that we're Irish. All get together, have people dress up in colourful costumes, dance around the street, and we invite people in for a bit of crack. That we don't like.
Well, can we be very clear? The Patrick's Day parade is not Irish. It started in America. The first Patrick's Day parade started in the US. So again, it comes back to paddywhackery, a whole load of stuff that is imported rather than organically Irish, I believe. And I think most Irish people feel that. So therefore, I stick by what I said. I think the Patrick's Day parade is about tourism, especially in Dublin, is about tourism. I agree with you. When my kids were small, because I didn't want to go into the Mallee in Dublin City and get stuck here for hours, we used to go to, I think it was the one in Bray. And again, it was only a step above the tractors with the thing. And that was nice. And it was over in a little while and the kids felt they did something. Now, having said that, just to cheer you up and to make sure you don't think that I'm a complete curmudgeon. I do
that
early.
May have said,
I do. Well. I do in February every year, and as I have done this year, pack a wee box to go off to Australia with Patrick's Day t-shirts and yokes for your hair and flags and the whole work, so that my darling beloved grandchildren will be suitably attired. And they have been early.
Zogabons.
They have. As I woke up this morning, they were. I have the videos of them at their local St. Patrick's Day parade, where there was bagpipes. Very Irish.
If you feel the need to help me with some positivity, 53106. At a cost of 30 cent, 087 1400 106. We'll move on to other issues. This being, Kieran, the sort of big news of the day is in the front of the Irish Independent. We've had all week the issue of the what's being described as the tent cities, the international protection applicants who find themselves in the centre of Dublin City living in squalid conditions in tents through no fault of their own. Meanwhile, Fionnán Sheehan in the Irish Independent, he being their Ireland editor, is reporting that there are 160 asylum beds open in what appears to be a sort of a 3 or 4 star hotel. I mean, very nice accommodation, but that bureaucracy around the planning system means that it's all mothballed and nobody can move in.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are other venues that are facing similar issues. Like, it's such a messy situation, and it's I don't know if you've walked. I walked past that the tents to have a look at it a couple of weeks ago, and it's grim. Like, the stench is unbelievable, and like, it's no surprise to hear that scabies is common. And like, scabies now, like, you would think of it as a 19th century disease. And a few months ago, I read a book, a fascinating book about a history. It's called A History of Death. And it looks like that there were, you know, what caused the biggest
You're
spike.
Full of crap.
Yeah, I'm great. Full of the joys of life. Let me tell you a bit of history of death, Anton. But what it's fascinating is so many different diseases and plagues and epidemics, etc., down through the centuries. The root cause was a lack of clean water. And you can imagine what these poor unfortunate people are dealing with. And the system is broken. You know, the system is broken. Like, from this piece, they have sped up the process, but they need to speed it up more.
And it looks like it's going to be weeks, even with the current pressures that are on them. They're not going to get this solved anytime quickly, according
to
me. No,
and I can't see how, you know, it's... How do you speed it up? You know, I'm not really sure what the solution is. Like, especially when even a rumor that a hotel or a building has been used for has led to protest and buildings been burned, even a rumor that untrue rumors. So I do have sympathy for the authorities on this, and there are people weaponizing it for their own malicious ends as well. So, like, you do have international obligations, and people who come here claiming asylum, they have to go through a process. But where you keep the people during those process, that process now has become a huge problem.
And even if
keeping them in tents on the side of the road certainly isn't the answer.
If you take out even, because there is obviously a legitimate debate around that process and the merits on either side, but the notion of having people living in tents while at the same time 160 beds are available but unusable thanks to red tape, that's evidence of something that is badly broken, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. But I mean, this is not new. This is something that has been brewing for months, if not years. And I mean, you know, a fair bit of the blame lies at the foot of government, where they went into communities and they didn't do proper communication and proper preparation with communities where they were going to allocate a closed hotel or something like that to asylum seekers. And it led to exactly the problems that Kieran was talking about. It was interesting. I was in Dunleary, my hometown, last night, and I parked my car outside what used to be the Dunleary Senior College building, which was a school when I was growing up. And you could see, and it has been now being used for refugees and asylum seekers. And I'm sure there are, I mean, I know the particular one that was in this piece is in Rosslare, but I'm sure there are buildings all over the place that, you know, should be being investigated with some degree of urgency. Having people living, as was described, on the side of the road where the stench is awful, like, that's a problem for everybody. I mean, even if you're going to be selfish about it, that is not going to do anybody's health any good, particularly the people in tents, but also the people who are living around the area. So that has to be sorted out with a degree of urgency. But I think there's the double-edged thing of the government in one way thinking, well, if these pictures of tents, you know, go around the world, that maybe it'll stop the flow of people coming in, which is an awful way of doing that.
It'd be a very cynical tactic
case. But, you know, I don't know.
The other thing, and this is going slightly sublime to ridiculous, maybe you guys were familiar with this, but it was total news to me. There is a post box that is near the childhood home of Killian Murphy. This is Ballintemmel Post Office, a short while from where he grew up, that has been painted gold, and on it it says, Killian Murphy, best actor, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
This is matched by one in O'Connell Street, which says Element Pictures, lots of Oscars, or something along those lines. When did they start this crack of painting post boxes
well,
gold?
Well, they did it after Independence, because famously, one of the lines that was often thrown out is the first thing the Irish authorities did was they painted the red lamp post boxes green, and you still see the ER symbols on a lot of the old...
Which you have to like our sense of practicality. Just paint it green. It'll do fine. Who cares?
Yeah, but I remember I covered the London Olympics in 2012, and this was actually a thing back then, that all their Team GB's gold medal winners in their home places, they painted a post box gold. But I'm delighted with Killian Murphy, because I know this sounds like a claim that I was in the GPO in 1916. But I was living in Cork in 1997, and I went to the Triskel Theatre with just 100 seats to see two unknown actors in a play called Disco Pigs. Killian Murphy and Elaine Walsh, and he was only 20, and I thought he was fantastic. And I went out.
You knew even.
I didn't say he's going to win an Oscar, but I said, "Oh God, he's quite good, isn't he?" There you go.
How do you feel about his post?
I think it's great, but I mean, post have to be given, you know, a gold medal for a good PR move. I'm just wondering when they will be painting one in his now hometown in Monkstown in South County, Dublin. Will we have a gold post box there into which we can post our press?
We will forward your questions to David McRedmond and try to get an answer as soon as is possible. Guys, thank you very much. That is Barbara Scully, broadcaster and writer, and Kieran Cunningham, journalist from the Irish Daily Star. Text to say, your guests are right about local parades. My daughter is marching in our small town parade in Kildare tomorrow, and she is so excited. Well,
a hopeful note to end on now.
Yeah, we found that positivity parade.
Dublin needs more local parades. Like, you know, there should be one in Malahide, Fairview, etc.
There's one in Dunleary, I believe, for the first time.
Not only is there one in Dunleary that you raised, Barbara Scully, but central to the one in Dunleary is our own Bobby Kerr, around whose gravity the entire thing will orbit. He can tell you more about that when he arrives here for Down to Business.
The Anton Savage Show, Saturday.
With Nifty Business.
Saturday morning at 9. On News Talk.